I want to say in the beginning that the goal of this always is to show Christ in love, right? I think it's really easy sometimes when we're debating people, if you do that, a lot of us do that in some way or another, whether it's friends, family, coworkers, etc. It seems like we're arguing, right? Like, and that's a part of it sometimes, I guess. But we don't want to argue. We just want to share the good news that we have. And I think we have good reasons for what we believe, and I think we have good points to tell people. And I don't think there's a reason then to get upset about anything, right? I mean, we don't need to get angry or irritated with people, and God doesn't want us to do that. The reason I'm saying that is because sometimes when we read this kind of an article and we think about dialoguing with someone who's not a believer, and sometimes even someone who's an atheist and is angry and maybe upset, and upset with the world, with God, with whatever, with us, it sometimes lends us, I think, or leads us to be angry in return. And we don't want to do that. We're not trying to win a fight here at all. We're just trying to show love. And so I want us to think about that as we're thinking about what this article says and how we respond to someone in love, okay? So even if they make an argument that is unfounded, or they build a straw person and whatever else, we don't want to respond with anger. Fair? I mean, we all know that, but I just want us to think about that, because the point of this whole course is to make us more and more like God always, and like his son Christ always, right? So we need to always remind ourselves. I need to be reminded of that sometimes, because it's easy to say, oh, I won that debate, or I got that. Like, I came out on top in the end. Well, that's not the point. We're not trying to come out on top. Okay? All right. So I guess you heard us read this last week. If anybody touched the link and looked at it again, that'd be great. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to bug my son, Caleb, because he's in the front row. Should never sit in the front row. It's really silly. No, you guys are awesome, all of you. Good job. You are going to work, though. I'm going to give him this stack of the Atheist Alliance International article, handout, and I'd like to just give one of these copies to each group. So if you get into groups of, like, I don't know, 6 to 8 people, and just think about what we read last week, and if you want to peruse the article, you can just glance through it and look at it, but hopefully somebody will have read it. And I wanted to talk about it for like 5 or 10 minutes as a small group and the way you'd respond, okay? So you can even just like read the headings and respond to the headings. That's maybe fine. Okay, good enough? So we'll do that. Take about 8 to 10 minutes with groups of 6 to 10 people or so, and then we'll come back together at the end, okay? And my son, Caleb, if you can stand, he'll look to each of the groups, and he'll bring one of these copies to each of the small groups, okay, if you guys don't have it from before or you didn't read it. Thanks, Caleb. So you all know, I just talked to Jack about this, there's just one thing to read. The same thing we read last week is the same thing Caleb's passing out, is the same thing I sent the hyperlink to, okay? So it's just one article, there's not multiple things.
Thank you. It's hard to take it from a Christian perspective when he's lumping in everything.
Right.
So then what guy would you choose from? So that's the problem. It's really one over and another. They've changed over time. There's different guys. Then he gets to the interesting area. Okay, well, then if you don't believe in your heart, this is where, you know, bias is a higher. But he says, if you think about it, let's just take some things that are clear cut. We obviously know certain things are wrong. Burning somebody, forgive me. Analogy is horrific. If you start taking all these and start thinking, what is it about the problem of all these things that we know are wrong? Well, it's that they harm human beings, right?
Yeah, they have to be humans, because you can't.
You got to be human.
You can't be a moral guy.
That's right. You got to involve humanity, because rocks aren't moral. That, I thought, was the best part I read. I agree with that. But then when you add, you know, some things are clear. Comparing the two lists allows us, curious, actions that are necessarily called second to the human law. And actions that are improvements of human being. If you got that by just listing things that you know are right and wrong, and saying, what is it in common about you? You're looking at things that's wrong with your health.
I am the
just trying to get this thinking about his ability to be in the future.
I say you can make up your own list.
And then he goes on to say, that doesn't mean it's always easy. There are more morality. Yeah, some things are easy, but some things are so then he concludes, God can't be the source of morality. Because, it, again, back to the problem, it's either arbitrary or morality is outside of God. There's a bunch of different gods.
Yeah, and he kind of concludes by saying, we need to rely on reason and science versus Iron Age books.
Right.
Which just really shows the opinion of scripture and the word.
Exactly.
How can you even reason then with that idea?
So, I don't know. I'm going to give it. I tried my best. That's kind of what Jonathan Zacchaeus is saying. Now, are we waiting for a question from Dave, or are we just supposed to give our minds or opinions? Or anybody have any thoughts on anything I said? I got a lot of thoughts, but I'm going to let you know.
Well, I don't think it's about any depression, so I don't think it's really irrelevant.
No.
I don't think it's
oh, really?
Yeah, so sometimes you have that informal conversation.
Oh.
Still not important on this, if I know.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Have you ever had any discussions on wider law or morality?
You probably saw more this thought on here.
Okay.
What I think, in my opinion, the fact that people, it seems that even though it evolves, there's an inherent confidence in the minds of people that tell them that what is good or bad, that also matters. And so, my interpretation of that is the God in us, the human beings. God, that helps me to explain the fact that we can all agree that certain things that we don't agree on in terms of morality, but there are other things that we agree on. And so, because of the shared image of God that we all have as human beings, that people now have, that we are certain that we have to be. That probably might be my take on it.
I know for myself, I've always wrestled with the idea of trying to be a person who's good at evangelizing, because it's not anything that I feel I have a skill towards, or not even a skill, but the gumption in a lot of cases to go up and be able to have those hard conversations. I remember distinctly listening to a sermon maybe a year ago in my old church. The pastor said it's not on us to try to convince and debate our way into making an atheist believe. Because when you see this, you can tell that they have very entrenched views that have been happening for a while. But what it is on us is to pray for the Holy Spirit to be convicting and to be there to help answer some of those questions when they arise, but not to try to debate something necessarily into a sense of. Because you can be in a pretty precarious situation when you're trying to stay the same. Where is the pride coming into play about saying my view is correct versus praying for that person specifically and saying, I don't know how this will be shown to me, but pray to have God reveal it to them.
I have a little bit of a different take than that.
Yeah.
Although very similar. I see what you're getting at. Clearly the Holy Spirit has to be involved.
Take another 2 or 3 minutes. You guys are all talking about
I
think Jesus and the apostles do that constantly in the New Testament. But I agree with you. You're not going to, if you start getting into this back and forth, you say, this is what you're getting at. You're just saying you're wrong and trying to humiliate. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Ultimately, there's something inside of your spirit has got to
be. But you're right, there's truth.
Yes.
Absolutely.
That's kind of a balance, I think. If I can, I think it's kind of a two basic points.
Yeah.
I can see this in the class too. In the first part, I think the problem is there's a distinction between is there a right or wrong, and how do you come in? How do you come in? You start getting in which God is it, what year, and that one they thought was good, and what did they kill? That's all. How do we know there's a right or wrong? First, we have to look, is there a right or wrong? He agrees that there is. He says you can't get it from God, he uses the thing from Plato and Euclid, that it's either arbitrary or it's either God makes it up and it's arbitrary and God has to abide by it and it's outside of God. One of the ways that you could maybe feel that is just saying maybe it's just part of God's nature. So it's not made up. It's not just throwing a dice and saying this is right, this is wrong. It's part of his good nature. It's eternal and essentially Jesus. So it's found in him, but it's not just a whim, it's not his decision. So his morality reflects his nature. I think that counts as the way to it. Is it outside of God? No. Is it arbitrary? No. Is his nature just eternal? The second thing I was going to say is that in this case, what he thinks is immoral too, without God. And he says, some things are just clear cut. They're just not. Well, he's just bypassed. How do you know there's a clear cut? He just lists these things and says, so whatever helps human beings, well, why is helping human beings matter? What if there was an alien in another planet that was really advanced and we were like ants to them? They could kill us. They would do that. I mean, that's just to say that we're special and everything that helps human beings or helps human beings. So that was just totally arbitrary. I don't see this reason. So I agree with him. That's another thing he's given things. Nobody is the problem is, what is the problem with us right now? When you say the healthy person is here and the hurt person is here. And without God, all this is just a material universe. It doesn't seem to me that there's any reason why something is good and something is bad. And that is not facing that. He says, you know, we don't need that. Let's just know what we know is right. Wait a minute, how do you know that's right? He just starts listening. I think we skipped the other. So I'm giving him his track, and he's trying to get there. I agree with him, but there's things he knows right now. But he's never answered the question. Why?
All right, last thoughts. Your final sentence. All right, this is actually really good. You guys are still talking and wanting to talk, so thank you. If you guys want to stay in your group region, that's totally cool. You can just look this way. That way, if you want to dialogue amongst yourselves as we're talking, that's totally fine. Or if you want to come back, that's cool too. So it seemed like this is really worthwhile for you guys. We talked about this, obviously, before when we talked about morality as evidence for God's existence. This is a good review then. Before we start marching through the article sort of point by point, any overarching thoughts that you or the rest of the the group you were in had? Any thoughts? Just big ideas, not like specifics, but yeah, Steve.
I thought, I'm going to give him, try to give it in the interest of, like you said, love and compassion and trying my best. I think he raises, or whoever the author is, he or she.
Yeah, we don't know who it is, right? I think it's fascinating they didn't put their name on this.
Anonymous.
Yeah.
But they raise an interesting point, a lot of interesting points. But the problem I found in reading the article is they started mixing up a lot of things. They started off going in one direction and ended up on different directions on how do we know what right and wrong is versus whether there is a right and wrong and so forth. I just think there's a lot of confusion here to stay with the central issue.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of tangents they take on different gods and why things were wrong. And none of that is relevant to the issue we started from at the beginning.
Yeah, and that's actually really good for us to think about, too, as we talk to someone in dialogue, to stay focused and not bring in, like, for example, I don't have a really good example, but sometimes we'll talk about the cults, hopefully, in a few weeks. But if you have a Jehovah Witness come to your door, knock on the door and talk to you, a lot of times in my experience, as the conversation proceeds, the team that's talking to you will eventually start pulling in lots of other extraneous issues into the dialogue. Like, why do you wear a wedding ring? That's pagan. Why do you look at the clock? That's pagan. Like, they'll just start to bring in lots of things that don't relate to the core issue. And the core issue for me is Jesus God? Like, that's the core. So I try to stick to that core, and eventually people just start bringing in lots of things. And actually, some people will do that on our end as well. Like, we'll start attacking the leader of the faith or whatever else, which those are reasonable, I think, to talk about, but it's not the point you're trying to get at. Does that make sense, right? So it's really important for us to stick to the core. And you're right. As you read through this, he definitely or she definitely does jump around. Actually, even from the very first title, Can Atheists Be Moral, right? That's the very first of all the headings. And the first two paragraphs don't even go back to that, actually, if you really pay attention to it. Because can they be moral? Absolutely. Yeah, sure. I don't deny that. I haven't. I don't know of any believer who does, actually. Like, it's a weird sort of, and the, well, so we'll get to that in a second. But anybody else have any, like, big idea thoughts? Yeah.
Judgments about what is right and wrong, and then do those conflict or are they unified?
Yeah.
And then secondly, when we're talking to people who might be arguing from this kind of position, I think one thing that can be very disarming is instead of trying to engage directly in the argument, like sharing personal sharing our testimonies, personal stories of, you know, how God has impacted us, that can be very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so in thinking about why we believe what we believe, I think the most powerful part of our faith is the communication of God with our spirit, like, right, his spirit with our spirit. Like, that confirms to us that we believe and that we know him. That's the key that overrides all of this that we're talking about, both last term and this term. We're trying to think about things in nature and in scripture to give people for good, as good reasons and strong evidence, and that's important to do. And yet the most important thing in my own life, in my own heart, is that the Holy Spirit is communing with my spirit, right? Like, that's how I know that I belong to God. Like, that's the strongest evidence for me. And yet I can't share that directly with someone else. So I do the next best thing. I can share my story. And I can also share the things that reinforce that faith that I have, which is what we're trying to do in this course, right? So that's a really good point. Anything else? Yeah.
Sometimes, sure, that might, they're very tolerant, like we spoke of before, except if you're posing something that's contrary to what they believe sometimes.
Yeah.
But I've often found that, like, if you do begin with your testimony and what you have experienced with Christ, that most people aren't, like, their first thought isn't to say you're wrong for having felt that.
Yeah.
They're much more willing to listen.
Yeah, it's kind of a change. Like, so based in the culture, a post-Christian, post-relative, post-modern culture, that can actually be even more effective sometimes, because we've all been taught to not downplay someone else's experience. Now, obviously, if my experience and your experience are diametrically opposed, we both can't be right. And yet, we'll still at least listen and hear the person. So that's actually changed a lot. It's one of the positives, I guess, of a syncretistic, postmodern, post-faith kind of culture, if you can think of it as being a positive. Anybody else? That's good.
I think he makes a good point for the universal standard.
It's fascinating because he does say there is an objective standard. He can't, yeah, or she can't pin down what it is,
yeah,
but the argument is that we can actually get to that via reasoning and science and rationalization.
At the bottom of that first page, he says moral standards change over time, and they're different in different societies.
Yeah.
So he's really making a good case that we really need a universal standard if that's the case.
Yeah, it's fascinating because I think their overarching thinking and argument is, yeah, there's an objective standard, it's just not God, but that objective standard changes, right? Like, that's the big idea. Like, there's a standard, we can find it with our big brains and vast science knowledge, and yet it's going to change over time, which is interesting, actually, in and of itself. We can talk about that, but yeah, that's their statement of truth, I guess. And they actually talk about truth. Did you guys catch that? It's he's or she is right. Like, truth doesn't change. Yet, objective standards change, according to them. Interesting. Anybody else?
I don't think he or she is claiming that the standard has changed, but only that we have become more aware and more, we've figured it out.
I see what you're saying. Right, yeah. Right, yes, that's right. Yeah, thanks, Betty. So it's not that the objective standards, thank you, it's not that the objective standard has changed, it's that maybe our understanding of that changes in time. It's interesting then because that becomes our standard that we follow. I think what I'm trying to say is, and thanks for tying this in, even if the objective standard isn't changing and we're finding it, what we practice as right and wrong changes, right? I mean, and that's, I think, fascinating as a take. Yeah, it's good. Thanks for that. Anybody else? Yeah.
I think we underline we have a moral standard and understanding because as a nation we have a Christian background in ethics.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting more and more diffused, but it still is there much more than we realize.
Part of the culture. Hmm. Yeah, so we'll talk about that. I feel like, I mean, I guess I'd push back a little bit on that. I'm not saying you're wrong. I think how cultures express underlying morals can be distinct. But I think if you look at all people, all places, all times, that core actually is almost exactly the same. So for example, I don't know. In America, we think it's okay to eat a Big Mac, and in India, they think it's wrong to eat beef, right? Well, our morals aren't different. It's just that in America, I don't think the Big Mac is my long-dead grandmother, father, mother, whatever else. Whereas in India, they believe that the beef is possibly a departed loved one. And so the underlying moral is the same. Don't eat your grandmother, for real. Right? But I don't believe that my grandmother is the cow. You know what I'm saying? So I guess my point is, like, for all people, all places, at all times, taking a life without just cause is always wrong. And yet what constitutes a just cause can slightly change sometimes, right? So I think that's the key. But I think if you look at all people, all places, at all times, in general, the moral code is the same. I mean, because God says it is, like Paul says it. So if you actually, we'll get there in 1 second. I want to get to Paul in Romans. It's important. But I want to make sure we don't have any more big idea thoughts, concepts.
Kind of along the fact,
yeah.
If I try to put myself in the place of somebody here, and if I don't have a religious belief that I'm tied to, right? So I'm looking at what is morality around here, and I look at all the different religions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if I'm trying to make a relative moralistic thing, I'm going to say, yeah, it's probably wrong to kill somebody, right? I mean, that's probably. But when I started looking at some of the fringe stuff, like how you treat your wife, you know, the value of that, that starts to get a little confusing, I would think, if I'm trying to say there is a standard out there when I'm looking at all these different ones.
Yeah.
To reconcile that.
Yeah, so and I think you need to build on the core. I mean, so I would definitely go back to the core and build, right? So with regard to theft and rights of property that you own, with regard to personhood and responses to personhood, how you treat people, taking a life without just cause. I mean, there's a core that all people are building all the rest of those things on,
right?
Right? And so I think that's the point. If you look at all the worldviews out there and you hone in, even on those fringe, you know, issues and concerns, underlying it all, we understand when we've done something wrong, right?
Right.
I mean, and so I guess I would look at those fringes as more of the outliers than the major concern.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean they're not complicated.
I'm trying to pull this together.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that.
Yeah.
This person.
Yeah.
That would be confusing.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I think it's important for us to recognize how we arrive at the ethics that we arrive at from that core, and then realize that the complex cases are usually conflicting values that are core values. That's usually where we run into concerns and problems, where we don't know what to do. It's because there are multiple core values that may conflict or seem to conflict, right? I mean, I think that's, like, when I've studied this and taught this from, like, an ethics standpoint, just strictly from an ethics standpoint, that's where we find the challenge. This is good. This is good stuff. All right, so if you'll allow me, in the interest of time now, let's just kind of march through some big ideas. I want to just go from the beginning through the end. I'm not going to read it, but just a few key things that I picked out. And if there are more you want to talk about as we go, please stop me, okay? I just have my, like, six or seven or whatever, but I want to make sure that we really get all this out, because this is important, and we're going to talk to people about this all the time, actually. I've talked about this with people for years. So the first point I brought up is the first heading of the paper, Can Atheists Be Moral? And I think the argument is yes, absolutely. I don't know of any believer who thinks that atheists can't be moral. And so these following two paragraphs are essentially not reflective of believers, right? So the author says immediately, many theists believe this is a clear cut. Humans can only have opinions about morality, and no one's opinion is any more valid than anyone else's. So part of me agrees with that, right? Because it's true that we have opinions, but our opinions are based on something else, right? And so if there's no God, then everyone's morality is essentially their own opinion or the group's opinion. So that part is true. I mean, I would agree with that. Then the person says this leads them to the conclusion that an objective morality must stand apart from and above humans. Yep, I agree. The source, I say, is God. So far, so good. Since atheists reject God, atheists can have no basis for morality. Not true, right? So it falls apart there. So if you have your Bibles with you, if you can turn to Romans for me, look at Romans chapter 2. And let's start at verse 12 and read through verse 16. This is really important, right? So Paul is setting up this section about Gentile pagan moralizers, and he's talking about the law in this section, and about God and our relationship to God and right and wrong. So let's jump in at verse 12 and read through 16. The first person who gets this, if you could read out loud for us, that'd be great. Romans 2, verse 12. Anybody?
All who sin apart from the law will also perish apart from the law, and all who sin under the law will be judged by the law. For it is not those who hear the law who are righteous in God's sight, but it is those who obey the law who will be declared righteous. Indeed, when Gentiles, who do not have the law, do by nature things required by the law, they are a law for themselves, even though they do not have the law. They show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts, their consciences also bearing witness, and their thoughts sometimes accusing them and other times even defending them. This will take place on the day when God judges people's secrets through Jesus Christ, as my gospel declares.
So what's Paul saying here? What's the big idea? What's the take-home point?
Everybody has a built-in sense of right and wrong, and on that they'll be judged whether they know specifically about law coming from God or not.
Yeah. So Romans 1, if you have time today, go back and read it, says that God exists and people all know it. Romans 2 says that in addition to a knowledge of God, we have an understanding of our relationship with him, actually, in the fact that we're sinners, because we know what's right and we know what's wrong and we know when we haven't done what's right. And so can an atheist be moral? Yeah, because God's written upon their heart, whether they believe in God or not or accept him or not, God's written on their heart what's right and what's wrong. And so that core is for all people, all places, at all times. Now, it doesn't mean it's easy. Sometimes some cultures express that in different ways, right? That's fair to think about. But it's typically a conflict between which moral, specific moral understanding or value or imperative is more important than the other, right? I mean, it's really what it boils down to most times. And this can be complicated. I get it. It can be complex. But we live in a complex world, right? So that's important to think about and know. But can an atheist be moral? Yes. And atheists can have a basis for that morality, for that objective standard, and that basis is what God's written upon their heart. Steve?
Okay, maybe this is just semantics, because I agree with you on the question that it was wrong. Can atheists be moral? We agree, yes.
Yeah.
But I thought that the last sentence of the first paragraph is exactly correct, and I thought that's a standard argument that colleges use. Since atheists reject God, atheists can have no, here's the key how he phrases it, basis for morality. So while I agree with you that in their hearts they can know things that are right and wrong, that's why we can converse with things about in general it's better to love people and do good things to people than do bad things to people. The question is, in an atheistic universe where all there is matter.
Yep. So two things happening here.
Why are those things wrong?
Yep. So there are two things here. In the atheist world, right, if there is no God, then the believer would say, in that world, then there is no basis. Yes. And yet in the actual world in which we live, atheists can have morality, and they can have a basis for that morality. Whether they accept God or not, that basis is God. So again, in an atheist world, if there is no God, the believer would say there's no basis. And I would agree with that. Like, that's what you're saying.
No,
I can't know exactly what you're saying, but it sounds like that's what you're saying.
What would the atheist say is their basis?
Well, so the atheist would say,
this person says, yeah, it's jumbled.
Right. Well, I would imagine, like Richard Dawkins and Bertrand Russell, whoever else would say, the basis is society working the best for the population. So either from the person individually, some will say that, or from society as a whole, collectively coming up with what the basis should be, that would be their standard. And they would say, I could figure that out by using rationalization and reason and science. I could get to what the group thinks should be. I think that's what most people would say. And so in that world, if you're an atheist, a believer would say, that's really not a basis after all. Right, so that, I mean, I would accept that. And yet in the believer's view of the atheist living in a world where God does exist, they actually have a basis even if they don't know what it is or accept it. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Pete first.
I think we have a lab situation as far as putting this into practice in Nazi Germany. And NBC did a white paper that ended up as a educational film that I used to use called Twisted Cross, and they worked off of the candlelight ceremony in Nuremberg when Hitler took over, and there's an overvoice talking about what the whole plan is, and the whole idea is, you know, we're now marching to the Twisted Cross, and Nazism is taking all of the Christian softness out of German society and going back to what Germany was prior to being exposed to Christianity, deciding that that's a very negative thing as far as Germany was concerned, to have all of these limitations on what you could and couldn't do. And so basically you turn these people loose without any sort of Christian influence on them, and they do what they did. And of course then when everything was over, they ended up at Nuremberg. And I'm not sure that people took out the Bible to talk to Nazis and say, you did this and you did that, and what you violated is the Bible. They took basically what the rest of society has accepted as secular right and wrong, and they were judged on the basis of that.
Yeah, and I mean, if you, to tie into what you're saying, when you look at those trials, the German argument was, we did what we as a people thought was right, And the rest of the world says, no, we can recognize that you as a people can't come up with that standard, right?
And you can't rationalize right. the things yeah. that you did just yeah. because you all decided that it was okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the world's response was, yeah, there actually is a standard, and you went against that standard. Like, that was the argument. That was the response. And to the Germans, it seemed logical and reasonable and rational. What they were doing was okay. And it was. From their perspective, if you as a group determine what's right and wrong, then it makes sense that you can do what you want to do. Like, that's logical within that worldview. It's totally illogical from God's standard and his worldview, but it's totally logical. They're being intellectually honest within their own worldview. And that's why they argued that way. Like, why should you tell us what we can or can't do? And the rest of the world was like, that's the dumbest thing we've heard. Paraphrasing the world. Yeah, all right. So anybody else have any thoughts before we move on? Do you have a hand up before? Yeah, totally.
Or did, they acknowledged many gods.
Yeah. Not that some didn't believe in any god at all.
Clearly, though, I was just trying to think of this concept of atheism really developed with the development of the scientific method and then taking that.
I think it was popularized in the Enlightenment because then we're God, essentially, right? So the Enlightenment made people God more than any other time, and yet there have been people since the beginning of time who didn't believe in a god. Yeah, for sure. So that's the first part. If we move on to the second part, does morality come from God? Without going into all of this, the author talks about this Euthyphro argument, right? We've talked about this before, last term, and they say there are really two prongs of this. One, God commands things because they're good, and so then the standard is outside of God, or things are good because God makes the command that they're good. Does that make sense? Those are sort of the two prongs. Either God says it because it is good, or it is good because God says it's good. Those are the two prongs, okay? We talked about this last term. What's the correct way to think about right and wrong? At its core, right and wrong, morality at its core flows from what?
Character
of who God is. So both of those prongs are wrong. I would agree that God does not, I would argue and agree with the statements that something isn't right because God says it's right, and also God doesn't say something because it's right. Those are both not true. It is true that right and wrong flows from the character of who God is. And so it ends up being the case that what God commands is true, but not because he commands it and not because it's good outside of him. Right? And so the whole point of this section then falls apart because it's not what we believe. It's not how we would define good and evil, right and wrong, right? Is that fair? So I would agree that both of those don't work. I mean, he says they don't work for right and wrong and or she, and I agree that they don't because it's not what we believe, right? So God isn't arbitrary ever. Now, they bring up some arguments about the Old Testament and how God treats people in the Old Testament as compared to how believers treat individuals now. Did you guys catch that? How might you respond to that? So they would argue that in the Old Testament, God commands death for certain things that we don't command death for now, like adultery, for example, blasphemy, right?
Collecting firewood on the Sabbath.
Yeah, and a homosexual. So in this case, this person says for being gay, right? What does the Old Testament say with regard to same-sex relationships? This is important because I think that if you read this article, it talks about someone is thrown from a building for being gay, right? I mean, what does God condemn in the Old Testament and the New? Right. Yeah, right. When you act upon that, right? I mean, so people all have certain predispositions to do things that are wrong and in sin, right? Like our predispositions are not the same. Mine is not the same as yours. So things that are a challenge for me that tempt me are probably not yours. Some may overlap, but some don't. And so I'm not a patient person in general. I'm just sharing this with you. Don't hate me. But I'm not a patient person in general. That's something I have to work on. I can get angered, I think, maybe more readily than I should. So that would be sinful if it's not righteous anger, right? And so that's something I have to work on, and that's something that's a part of who I am, actually. It doesn't mean it's right, but it means it's something I have to work on, right? And so it's not a sin for me to have the predilection or the predisposition to act wrong down the road. Does that make sense? What's wrong is when I actually act on those predilections or predispositions. That's really important. That's an important point. And so in the Old Testament, there's this is a part of this. In the Old Testament, there are these things that God says that you cannot do. And if you do these things, your life has to be taken before God. Yeah, Jack, please.
I just wanted to back up and work on that again. It seems like Jesus says just the opposite when he says that if you're angry with your brother, you've committed murder already. If you're...
Because you've acted in anger. But the predisposition to be angry...
It's not the act, it's the spirit.
Well, I guess I would... Maybe we're doing a word game here. I'm not trying to do it. If I have the sensation of anger... right, toward the brother, then it is the act, whether it's internal or I've actually done something physically, right? But the anger part is the problem, but my predisposition, whether it's in my genes or environmentally or how I've trained myself, right, the predisposition is something that's inherent in me, even though I'm transformed once I'm saved, but if I don't act on that, then I haven't sinned. Does that make sense? I just want to make sure we're talking the same things. I think we agree on this. Maybe you guys can help me out.
You need to confess the anger as a believer.
Well, so, but the anger is something. Like, the angry spirit is something, even having the thoughts or the spirit of anger, just as much as acting out on the angry spirit to hurt someone or say something I shouldn't. Like, those are all part of the acting on, whereas the underlying predisposition, right? I mean, I'm not in the Jewish society even then. I wouldn't have been put to death because I have a predisposition to being more angry than someone else. But if I act on that in a way that I shouldn't, then I would be. I mean, anger's not the right one, but like for adultery, right? Is that fair? I just want to make sure we're actually clear. That's actually a really good point. I mean, I think we agree totally. Is that okay? Do you guys see what I'm trying to say here?
Isn't that an important distinction?
I think it's a really important distinction. Yeah. Right, and that's it.
It's not a matter of obeying this commandment and this commandment and this commandment, but it's making it integral in your thought and your brain.
Yeah, well, because the expectations are actually the same.
Yeah.
So the expectations from the Old Testament and the New are actually the same, but Jesus is raising the bar, I think. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Like, God hasn't changed his morals or his right and wrong or his expectations for us. And yet the standard that he holds us to gets higher and higher and higher. Well, it goes from Old Testament to New. And why can that happen? Like, I mean, God's totally fair and just, and it makes sense that he would do that. Why? Why does that happen? Why can that happen? From Old Testament to New.
We have the Spirit.
Yeah, we have the Spirit, and tied into having the Spirit, we have the Spirit because of the work of the Son. That's why we have the Spirit. Right, so now that we have the Spirit, because of the work of the Son, I have the ability to do all these things I couldn't do before, even though the expectations were still I could do them before. So the standard hasn't changed. God still says, these things are absolutely abhorrent before me, and you are not to do these things. Right? I mean, you are not to do these things. Adultery, murder, whatever else. Don't do this. If you do these things, your life is a forfeit before me. That doesn't change now. Our lives are still totally forfeit before God because of those same sins and the spirit of those sins, like Jack was saying. Except, what's happened now? Christ has paid that. So he already paid that for us. So now God says, Christ says, as God, this is the standard. I'm telling you, it's actually even worse than you thought it was as far as how strict it is. And yet I've done this for you. So now you can be right before me. I haven't changed anything. Your life is still, you're still culpable, and your life is still forfeit for these sins before God, but I've paid that price for you. So it's not changed at all, right? It's not a changing target. It's the exact same thing, I think. And the key is that we have these, I think that's an important point. And also tied to that, even in the Old Testament and the New, the acting out on these predispositions is really important. And I think it's important for us to think about this, if you'll allow me the time to talk about this for a second more, because people now will make arguments like, it seems like to some people, maybe even individuals who struggle with certain sins, like same-sex attractedness, that these are inborn, built-in, right? People will say, will argue, well, God made me this way, right? I mean, you've probably heard that. Like, it's in my genes. I don't know if it is or it isn't. I think there are interesting studies on all sides of the issue. I don't think it matters one way or the other, frankly. Right? Because I know, and this is, if you'll allow me to divulge information about my family in particular, I can see, looking through the generations of my family, certain predilections for certain sins. I can see it. And you know what? I've got some of those as well. I wish I didn't, but I do. Right? And with the Holy Spirit's power, I cannot act on those. Right? And so the tie-in is when people talk about, well, how God treated gay people, it's not how God treated gay people, because all people are sinners of the same accord in God's eyes. There were certain things he said to do or not to do, and these things would result in certain consequences, some greater than some others, right? And the time we see the consequences being enacted, we're always someone acting on that evil, sinful spirit. And I think it's really important to think about. And I'm thankful that God treats us that way, actually, right? And I'm most thankful that God's Son, Christ, God, has paid that price for me, because I can't keep the law. I just can't do it, right? I mean, like you say, Jack, when Joshua was talking to the people, and he was telling them God's commands in the law. Jack has taught this a bazillion times, and it's stuck in my head now. When he tells them, you can't keep this. You're not going to keep this. And they said, what? Yeah, we've got this. Just what Ty talked about today, right? No, it's not that big of a deal. We've got this. Really? I don't. They didn't. No one does, right? Okay. This is good. So, thanks. Let's keep moving. I think that's an important part. So, the two-pronged argument here, right, this Yithrophro argument of God's commands and God using commands outside of himself fails. That's the take-home point, right? I think if you keep going, one thing that struck me was the argument that some things are obviously wrong. Did you guys catch that? So the author says some things are just obviously wrong. Remember what the example that he or she used? Yeah, like you dip your baby in acid, right? I think it's what it was. Or your child, your daughter, something like that, right? So what's your response to that? Some things are just obviously wrong. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Boom, high five, got that. Why? Because God's written it upon our hearts. So I can buy that, right? I mean, I think some things are obviously wrong. What I can't buy is that we can use our big brains and rationalization and reason to understand them, right? Because if there's no God, then what's left? If there's no God, then all that's left is, according to this author, some objective standard that we can use our big brains to apprehend, which isn't changing. Like Betty was saying, it's not the standards changing, and yet our understanding of it changes, right? That's an option, right? And or what most people would probably say, who are atheists who are writing about this, is that it comes from you or the group that you're in, right? That's kind of what you're left with. And I would argue that if you're an atheist, that's all you can be left with. Because what is a standard, like what is objective morality if you're an atheist? If all you believe in is time, matter, space, and energy, what else is there? By definition, nothing else. So anything else you're talking about is a construct of your thoughts. Does that make sense? There is no such thing, entity, as right and wrong. If you're an atheist, there can't be, because it's not a thing, right? It's a concept. It's an abstract concept. And so it isn't actually anything except the atoms and the molecules inside your brain doing stuff. So you can't actually have what they want, right? Because even if you have big brains and science and rationalization and reason, which, by the way, well, that's a whole side thing, but even if you give that, what you're looking for isn't anything. It's an idea. It's a concept. Right? And so it's interesting. Maybe they would argue, to be fair to them, that it's like mathematics. It just exists. That would probably be the argument. That's all they could say. Right? It just is. And so just like math, we discover math, we don't invent math, it's just there. I think I would probably ask an individual, who cares? And I wouldn't say that in a negative or like an obnoxious way, even though it sounds like it. I would say, why does it matter to me then? Right? Like, even if there is this object of standard, right, that's just like mathematics that exists, and I guess that's what they're trying to say, why is it prescriptive for me? Does that make sense? Because I can come up with some things in my world that make humanity and my life better that maybe you don't like. And you can think of some things that would make your life better that are probably something I wouldn't like. So why is something else outside of us prescriptive? I don't know. There's no response to that, I don't think. Is that fair? I think it's interesting because to stick to this person's argument, they argue that there are just some things that we know to be true, right? And their idea of what's right or wrong is, quote, actions that unnecessarily cause suffering or harm to humans are morally wrong, and actions that contribute to human suffering, that contribute to human well-being are morally right. Like, that's their argument, not mine, but theirs. Okay? If you allow that to go, then what's the natural consequence of that? Like, what should our response be? Like, if someone says what's best for most people is right and what's worse for most people is wrong, what's your response?
Why?
Yeah, why? Absolutely. Why do I care? One. And two, says who? Right? If we're on the individual basis, well, I may not agree with Steve, right, on what's right or wrong. I can envision a world where something... Like, Steve's got a nice car. I like your car, Steve. If I just take Steve's keys, I'm happier. I'm not going to lie. I got a car for free. Thanks, Steve. Steve's response is, I like your car, Dave. You want to swap? No. Steve's response is, it's mine. And my response is, I don't care. I'm happier, right? My well-being has been served, right? And my well-being is more important than Steve's. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that. And then you can say, well, maybe it's a group of people. Maybe you as a whole think it's not good if I take Steve's car. I don't care, right? Maybe at some point, half of you would say, I can see it's a good thing for you to have Steve's car because Steve makes more money than you and you don't have as much money. And so maybe it's a good thing for you to have Steve's car. I'm just coming up with this on the fly. I don't know. There could be some reason maybe you would come up with why I should have Steve's car. So it just doesn't work, right? It doesn't work. I mean, even their own argument won't work, I don't think. Okay, so then the person said, to reject the existence of objective moral truths because standards change over time, which they don't. Like, I was talking with you and a Betty about this, right? Standards don't actually change, but to reject the existence of objective moral truths because standards change over time would be like rejecting mathematics. So here it seems maybe like they do think that objective standards change, even though I don't think they think that earlier, right? I think they would argue that definitely our recognition of standards changes over time. That's probably what they're trying to say. Because it would be like rejecting mathematics because there are currently some problems that can't be solved. Well, what's the problem with that? Just because there are problems that can't be solved doesn't mean there aren't ways to solve the problem. There will be solutions, we just don't know what they are yet, necessarily. Right? So that doesn't work for them. Is that fair? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Just to play devil's advocate.
Sure.
Wouldn't someone in such a position try to argue that over time our understanding of good morality is evolving and collectively as humanity we're learning over time how to...
And I think that's exactly what they would argue. Because they would say, well, slavery is now wrong, but slavery used to be right. And my response to that is, slavery was always wrong, right? It's just that our understanding of... So slavery we're talking about here is in the sense of ethnic and racial disparity, right? So not like slavery in the Old Testament times, where a lot of times that was to pay off a debt, right? Like a lot of times slavery in the Old Testament is really well-educated families, whatever else, get into debt, and so they pay that debt off by putting themselves and their family up for sale, right? I mean, to do work for a certain amount of time, right? So it's not quite how we think of it now. But in this setting, racial, ethnic kind of slavery because of someone's skin tone, right, has always been wrong. It hasn't changed. But how did, and this is looking at how individuals, first of all, I would argue that many, if not most, individuals who held slaves at the time were probably not believers, truly. Now, I could be wrong on that, right? But if they're actually following God's law and God's pricking of their heart, they would recognize that's wrong. Is that fair? At least they would recognize what they're doing is wrong, even if they still do it. Is that fair? All right, so allow me to keep going, and you can disagree or not, it's fine. But even if we argue that individuals who were believers weren't pricked in their heart, their conscience wasn't pricked because what they were doing was wrong, what was the view of slaves at the time?
By the slave owners or by...
Yeah.
That they weren't human.
Right. Is that fair?
Well, that was the rational
That's the thinking. Right, so yeah. My point is, I'm trying to come to a point here, and maybe you guys will hate me for it, but my point is the underlying core value hasn't changed, right? Like, persons have inherent value. The argument was they're not persons. It doesn't mean they were right in thinking that. They were absolutely wrong. That was an abhorrent sin and an evil, absolutely, unequivocally, right? And so I would argue if their conscience is pricked and they recognized rightness and wrongness from God, they wouldn't engage in that. If they were engaging in that, they were subduing God's pricking of their conscience. Is that fair? And so there was still a recognition that what they were doing was wrong. Okay, now I'm going to keep going, and you guys can talk. This is great. Who was instrumental in freeing slaves? I'll snag you in 1 second, Steve. I want to just get this. Yeah, okay, that's fine. Yeah, but I want to still work on this while I've got it fresh, and I'll come back. Yeah, so believers were. Right? Believers were the ones. What's that?
And non-Christians.
Yeah, but the ones who were the most instrumental, I think, were the believers. And if they're non-believers, even if you give that non-believers were instrumental, the non-believers were instrumental because the recognition of what they were doing was wrong. Right? So I'll let you stay in a second, Steve, but yeah.
And to support this, and I did a project in my classes for the last few years that I taught, setting up an Underground Railroad scenario. And I ran it around someone running into someone who was doing outreach work in connection with the Second Great Awakening, because that was a primary part of that. So if you went to a tent meeting and an evangelist asked you to come forward and be saved, then the next thing he might turn around and say, okay, I want you to do something. And one of the big moral problems that we have in our society right now is slavery. So I want you to free your slaves, work, you know, to help slaves escape, or do something demonstrative to show that you really have a changed life. And the big thing is, you know, there's all this stuff going on as far as slavery is concerned, and we want you to plug into that. And I actually used that as a process for how some of the people that I had as conductors on the Underground Railroad, how they got involved in it in the first place, that they went through this experience.
I think
so that's part of the Second Great Awakening.
Yeah. I'm going to tie back into what Steve was talking about a little bit to get back to the core. I mean, the core of all this with regard to same-sex attraction being wrong, to putting your daughter in a vat of oil or acid being wrong, to slavery being wrong, the morals haven't changed. That core is still there, right? I mean, persons have inherent value because they're in the image of God. They always have had and they always will. And so people can suppress that truth, and people can try to go around it and talk about individuals not being persons, but in the end, there's a recognition by all people that that was wrong, right? I mean, I really believe that deep down, people understand that that's wrong, even if they suppress the truth. And by the way, what does the Bible say about our actions if we suppress truth over time? What's going to happen? Yeah, we're not even going to recognize that it's evil anymore, right? And so that's the core. The core of this, the point, I didn't mean to get it sidetracked on a tangential topic of slavery. The point is, under all of this, I mean, to treat people as they aren't persons has always been and will always be wrong. That's the core, right? That's the bottom line.
Can I chip in?
Yes.
Everything you said was actually good, but I just want to get back to the question that was raised. I want to encourage us, don't give in to the atheist. Don't let him frame the argument where we get defensive and we're trying to... The question was, atheists could just say that morality has evolved. That's correct. But under the atheist worldview, they can't say it's improved. They can't look and say something today is better than yet, because they have no basis. Human beings, why they have value, why certain things are right or wrong. In the end, if there's no God, there's no basis to say any of that.
That's right.
So yeah, it evolves, and you're explaining why the Christian says, well, it really hasn't evolved. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I would push it back, being just more of a fighter, than I would push it back on them and say, yeah, you can say it evolved, but you can't say it improved.
Yeah. I mean, so. I agree. I would agree with the part, especially if someone says our understanding has evolved. Right? I mean, I think that can be the case. I think it could be the case. And I think it's only the case, though, because believers are the ones who are recognizing God's standard and living a standard out, because we're not suppressing the truth to the point where we can't recognize it anymore. Because I would argue there's a lot of things that are more evil in the world now than they were 10 years ago, 50 years ago. Like, look at abortion. To me, that's an egregious problem. I mean, think of how many babies are being murdered every single day. I mean, that's a huge deal. And I think we should be talking about it. Like, it's a big deal. And that's something that I think in the culture, we've heard about it so much, we've been raised with it, we just sort of ignore it, actually, interestingly. Yeah?
Or that, like, currently there's more slaves in the world right now than at any other point in
humanity. Yeah. We don't see that in America, but yeah. And it tends to be the same races enslaving each other, actually. So I don't like race. We're all one race, by the way, right? Mm-hmm. Different ethnicities. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, that too. I think there's still a lot of ethnic slavery around the world, too. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So, all right. Thank you for sticking around. Any other final thoughts? We're not going to come back to this next week. We're done with this. So I want to make sure that if you have thoughts or comments, that you have a chance to say to speak them. And again, hopefully the core of this is what we got, because sometimes how I'm trying to explain it or how we're even talking about it in groups may not be the best way to do it. So I apologize if I've misconstrued or whatever else. I mean, I want you guys to get the core, though. Same thing for me. All right? Yeah.
Because it would seem to me, like, from an evolutionary perspective, if there's morals, that's more of a biological thing, and if it's just a result of our own wiring, it doesn't need its own realm. It's merely just descriptive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with that. And I think that's the issue with this article. It seems like there are two things. I think the author wants to say there's some standard that we can find, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, this is the problem, like you're coming up with, right?
Yeah,
I mean, I think it's, it's interesting, right? Because I think that locks the person into biology, whether they want to be locked in or not. Because even if there's an objective standard that's apart from God with no God, it doesn't matter, because the only way we can ever ascertain what it is if our brains get big enough and our group is smart enough to realize it. So I think it boils down to biology in the end, no matter what, if that's your take, I think. Okay, wow. This is good stuff. Anybody volunteer to close us in prayer? Yeah, thank you. Please.
Heavenly Father, I thank you that you are the author of truth. Truth and morality flows from your character. Father, I pray that you would give us all graciousness as we speak with friends of ours, peers of ours that are atheists. Or are of other faiths. God, make us good agents for you, good representatives of you.
Yes.
Let us showcase you in ways that, let us represent you well, Lord, so that when people engage with us, if they see something differently in us that they do in their other atheist peers. And Lord, let us seek out relationships with non-Christians, that we would be able to fulfill our roles as your vehicles of spreading the gospel to others. Thank you for everything that we've learned today and for Dave's instruction. And there is in Jesus' name.
Amen. All right, so we're off from this next week. We will do the resurrection, God willing. Anything else on the docket? All right, so if you have a handout from before, great. If you want a handout to read over the week, I have some for next week, but otherwise I'll bring the stack next week. Okay? So the resurrection, I don't have enough faith to be an atheist, chapter 12. All right?
Yes.
Thank you guys for being here. Thanks for being engaged. Have a good week.